Might be in the trash.
Why y'all just randomly get quiet though?
Are we recording?
Are we recording?
Oh, okay.
Yes, we're recording.
Yeah. If money did grow more trees, then I'm probably getting dirty planting seeds with her. Go broke, go rich with her. Cause that money ain't shit to us. And she was drowning, I swim to her. When I was younger, she'd swim to me. Cause that money ain't shit to me. Cause she a lover and a friend to me.
I ain't got a dollar to my name, but she always
tell me that I'm a deep thought right now. Your ambition, no watches and chains.
Well, get out of deep thought. You know what I'm saying? Just get excited. Be happy that we here all together in person. I can see you. I can see Tony. We know what's going on now. Look, we've been doing good without being able to see each other. So, you know what I'm saying? I'm excited for, how this going to turn out now. But, welcome back, everybody. How y'all doing? How was the weekend?
This is my kind of weather.
It is.
This is my kind of weather.
And like as far as like the whole weather thing, bonfire was litty too titty. Ty didn't make
I was at my niece's birthday party, and then I had to be up at 4 a.m. to get ready for the melanin market. So yeah, it's early bedtime Saturdays now.
Every Saturday
up until I'm done doing the melanin market.
Get that shmoney. I ain't mad at you. But no, we had a good time. You know what I'm saying? Birthday was fun.
Yes. Happy birthday again, Chris.
Yeah. Yo, I'm 33.
Wow.
It's getting up there. Like, at one point, I was like, man, all these numbers sound the same. But now I'm like, whoa, bro. Like, 40 is coming, like, fast on a speed train.
Ooh, don't say that.
It is though.
That fast?
Yes.
Well, we're all closer to 40 than 18 right now, so.
Dang, you going to push it to 8? Well, I guess that's when everybody.
Yeah.
No, 21. 21. 18 don't count for nothing.
No.
21 is when stuff started actually counting.
For some reason, like 18, I remember, like, I'm an adult now. I'm 18.
Man. 18, I was hyped. I went and got, like, a million piercings because I could sign for myself. Yo.
And don't you regret, do you tell me you don't even like to, like some of them?
First of all, I have these piercings stuck in me that I've had for like 12 years now, and like they're not going anywhere. So, yeah.
Wait, how does that work?
It has to anchor.
What does that even mean? I don't know. I only think I've ever
pierced my skin. I got like this little like screw that sticks out of my skin. Basically, I had to get it surgically removed to get it out.
Aren't those like
unless it falls out? Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. So here we are.
So what happens if it ever like get infected or something?
It hasn't gotten infected, but two of them. They just like pushed out of my skin. Hmm. So we're just waiting to get knocked up so the other four in my stomach can come out.
Okay. It's not where I was going at all. But. All right. Oh.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Just get knocked up. I mean, you're about to be 30. So
it's time.
Yeah. But, you know, there's some precursors to that.
Yeah, anyway, let's go. Yeah.
Yo. You gotta get a nigga.
Yes.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? It usually helps. Speeds the process up just a little bit.
You don't really have to.
You don't. You know what I'm saying? Like, are you down to, like, go to the bank?
I don't know. With time permitting, I may have to. So, we'll see.
Yo. That's so dangerous, though. You mess around and get,
anyway,
like, a dude named
Walt Can't Ducci. You pick? But you pick what you want, right?
What if they mix it up? You don't know.
Mix it up? Like, mix
no,
it
No, not, like, mix it in a jar. Like,
oh, what if
like they show you a picture of Morris Chestnut, and then you get, like, some random dude.
I heard
dude,
about something like that and happening.
Then I would be pissed.
I would be, too.
You ain't got nothing?
Well, I ain't got,
what
I
you gonna do?
But,
yeah.
I can't, but you should be pissed.
That would be terrible.
Well,
just do it the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
There's somebody out here that'll knock you up.
They out here.
What they call it? Sorry to be, what's the name of it? Like, shoot up the club.
Yo, you got to shoot the club up.
The club up.
Flood the basement.
Flood the basement.
Yo, you got to just.
I don't want my basement flood.
You sure?
No, I'd rather shoot the club up. You know, like the gunshots.
Oh, I ain't got the gunshots today. Next time. There you go. One gunshot for you. But But yeah, you know what I'm saying? Oh, I decided I was gonna like give y'all nicknames.
Huh?
Yeah. I didn't come up with ties yet. But you're definitely gonna be Pretty Tony.
Okay. All right. All right.
Can I be Fly Ty?
Sure. But I
Fly Ty Pretty Tony.
Fly Ty. Wait, Chris, what's your nickname?
I didn't nickname myself.
We gotta figure out Chris's nickname.
Ass eating Chris. What you mean?
That's not gonna happen. Stop trying to make that happen, yo. I'm cracking up because you came and got your little birthday gift.
I'm on a family meeting, and then he all say happy birthday to Chris, and then when he leaves, it's like, is that ass eating Chris? Yeah, man. You know,
that's ass eating. We ain't gonna do him like that. We gotta get him a good nickname,
please. Wait, did your mom ask that though? Yeah. tell her yes. Tell her that was who it was. Anyway. Wait, does she listen?
Yeah, she does.
Oh.
So she will hear this.
Good afternoon. Yo. Oh, but yeah, other than that, I mean, that was like my weekend bonfire. I had a dope pre-birthday. Had a little rose petal action, little candles, little personal chef. You know what I'm saying? That, shout out the money.
Mm-hmm. She did a really good job. That was nice. Mm-hmm. It was nice.
I appreciate it. And shout out to Chef Boy Ray, too. Her and her wife were the ones that chefed the food up. Mm. They're from Camden.
That's what's up.
So definitely shout out to them.
Hold up, is that the shout out business of the week?
It might as well be at this point. Yeah. You know, I don't know too many more details, but I did follow her because she's
amazing.
What's
her Instagram?
Chef Boy Ray.
Okay.
So Chefboyrae, if I'm not mistaken. I'll double check that before the episode is over. But yes, Boy Ray, based out of Camden. She came here. She did all the cooking and they came back and cleaned up.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I had a really, really good birthday overall. Then, you know, my mom did the whole cake thing. Yeah, can I tell you, every year my mom gets me a cake from Sweet Eats.
Okay.
And every year I tell her, I hate Sweet Eats. I hate that cake so much. Like, I think that is the trashiest cake on earth. But I'm learning to just like smile and be like, thank you. I'm
Does
grateful.
Everybody else in your family like Sweet Eats though?
I guess. I mean,
it's not for you. It's for us, actually.
Yeah, they was all hype. Like, oh, you didn't? Like, all right. I left it. I didn't even. I took two slices and then I bounced. And they're in the refrigerator. So I haven't touched it. But yeah, that was it. That was my weekend. You know what I'm saying? You did the Melanin Market again. How did that go?
That it wasn't as popping as last Sunday because people thought it was going to rain. But I still did fairly well. Still made some connections. And still enjoyed myself.
Still made some shmoney.
Always. And then my niece turned one.
Oh.
So that was exciting.
Oh, those pictures were adorable, by the
Camilla.
Way.
Camilla. Little Camilla. Shout out to you, sweetheart. Love you. Happy birthday again.
Bendita.
Is that Spanish?
I'm assuming. Wait, so a quick question about that. Like, have you ever done something like that before? I mean, I went there and I saw you in your element. You do a great job. You do an amazing job. But have you ever did that kind of like in-person selling, promoting your like to?
Mm-hmm, okay. Yes, I had last year. I had maybe... I did like at least 4 or 5 events last year. I started in November of last year doing the events. So yeah, I did a couple. But yeah, I enjoy them. I do. Like everyone, I don't know. They love my energy, which I appreciate that because sometimes I be like, to myself. So to have people be like, oh, I love your table. Your energy gravitated me towards you. And I'm like, oh, that's amazing.
Oh, that's cool.
So
though.
Yeah, got to meet some people. I was talking about always having trouble like finding friends as an adult. Mm. And like, I made some friends. So like we exchanged numbers and we're going to hang out. And I'm like, this is going to be great. I'm excited.
Make sure you send somebody your location.
Damn,
why we gotta
Chris.
Go there? Because
these
to have
new
some
friends. That's cool, but that don't mean that you. It's just like a date. Like you're supposed to let somebody know where you at.
Wait, these new friends know each other. You're just the new addition.
No, like these are like separate people, like just different vendors, people that were new there. Like, why you gotta make it all scary?
I'm not sure. It's not now scary. That's just being an adult.
I don't want to go with them. Cancel friendship.
I guess that's the 33 in me. That's me. make sure you tell somebody where you're at.
No, I'll share locations when it's time to meet up. But
not with me though. I ain't got no iPhone. So,
all right, Tony.
Yeah. Okay. Tony gonna be like, ooh, what's she doing in Vermont?
Right.
I'm like, oh, this is not my business.
Right. Just straight turn the phone off.
Or respond a day later.
Right.
Yeah. Anything interesting going this week that y'all wanted to like recap or anything like that? I know I got like one thing that I wanted to bring up, and that was the fact that Tory Lanez actually got indicted. So that took away everybody's little if he really did something, how come he didn't get indicted? How come he didn't get arrested? Blah, blah, blah. Well, here we are.
Now right. What?
He probably should have kept his mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
He's facing 22 years. He ain't gonna get no real time. But
he don't get no real time.
He probably won't get time at all, but I'm just saying.
I hope he gets a repercussion.
I mean, that would be something, but probably not anything that would equal what he should actually get. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, you know, an interesting development because it kind of came on the heels of him dropping that album. It's kind of like maybe she, even though she didn't like publicly respond, she was probably like, oh, that's how you feel. And probably went, you know, dropped a little bit of paperwork on her.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that happened. Anybody watch the vice presidential debate?
No.
I watched Corden. I just got to saw like the end of it.
But yeah,
not really much.
I tuned in for like 15 minutes. That was like all my brain could stand. We're screwed either way. The fly was the star of the show.
Mm-hmm. Is it true that Biden's selling fly swatters or something like that now? This is a joke.
It's all a joke.
Yeah, that's uncomfortable because this is real.
This is what we're worried stuff. About. Yeah,
but this is real stuff. We need you guys to fix. Like, I don't need this.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
He's selling petty rhetoric
because of Pence's fly.
Mm-hmm.
On his- And you know Trump can't love stuff like that, or at least he does.
Mm-hmm.
They want to petty stuff back and forth, right? But I will say Kamala Harris was a lot better than Biden was. And I don't know. I just don't mind her.
Okay.
I don't mind her at all. Like if, you know, because even if Biden get elected, I don't think he going to make it 4 years.
Alive?
I don't.
Okay.
I think he's going to like hit early dementia very soon. He's not all there. He's getting old very fast. So Kamala maybe got a good chance of being president. You probably should. You know, man, that stuff going to affect your life. People like one thing on their mind and like they neglect what all these other things could mean.
You said it does affect
it does.
Yeah, but say yeah, mm-hmm. I think
healthcare. All right, I'll put it this way. One president, one nominee doesn't even like believe in global warming. That should be enough for you to vote just right then and there, because like, fam, Earth going to get rid of us soon.
Did you see the 7 year clock that they put over? That they put up in New York. They have like this clock of the timeline. We have like 7 years and whatever to left right. to reverse, or we're shit out of luck.
And I believe it. Because, like, look how the world been acting, just period. Like, it's been all these tornadoes and hurricanes, and it's just more mm-hmm. frequent. The temperature is getting higher.
Warmer and warmer.
Yeah. And then, like, all the, what's some things called? The glaciers and...
Melting.
Yeah, everything's melting. Like
Ozone layer.
Did you know that the biggest hole in the ozone layer had closed up when everybody was on quarantine?
I would say it kind of improved.
Yeah, it kind of got better because we was in the house. But we about to mess that back up. But yeah, you know what I'm saying? Not to get off into a whole like political thing, but that was something else that happened over the last week that I tuned into. Shout out to the Lakers. They won the finals. Shout out to Brown. I know people think that I hate LeBron, but I really don't. I just hate his fans.
What's wrong with his fans?
Them niggas is annoying. They're like the top annoying fans on earth because they just be hype about everything. Like, this nigga can breathe. They be like, yo, don't nobody breathe like Brian.
That's how I feel about Beyonce fans.
Wow. We not going to disrespect Queen B.
I ain't disrespecting her. I'm just saying the fans Beyonce? Are annoying.
They are.
You already know who I'm here for. I'm here for Solange all day, so.
You all earthy.
That's my favorite sister. That's my sis.
It's only two of them.
That's my favorite sister.
Yeah, Solange is dope. The last album's trash, and I'm going to keep telling you that.
Anyway, back to LeBron.
Right. But yeah, that was it. That's all I got for like a whole recap. I ain't really got no 2 cents to get off either.
I don't have any 2 cents. Do you have a 2 cent?
I've been low. Like
you and me both.
I'm good off of the internet and
okay
news and everything.
Internet pretty stressful. Mm-hmm. It really is. Oh, I do got one thing that I want to get y'all opinion on. That was like the internet was all up on. How did y'all feel about Chrissy Teigen, like sharing the pictures from the hospital after her and John Legend lost their child and all that stuff? And people were like really critical of her, saying like, you know, she's doing it for attention, and who would actually post a picture from the hospital room if something like that happened? Like, how did y'all even see that happened?
Yeah, I did see that. You want to go first?
You good.
Oh, but like when I look at that, I actually support it. Mm-hmm. Because she has a following of women who probably have experienced that and didn't know how to express it and didn't know if others was going through it. Like, she is a celebrity. Her husband's a celebrity. They have this glamorous life. And guess what? Life is still challenging and hard. Hint, hint, what we're going to get to. But like, I think her just posting it, I didn't read the comment, but I did see it on Twitter. They were like kind of criticizing her, but yeah. I'm thinking like that this is an unfortunate part of life. And it's an unfortunate, if you get to that point, a part of the female experience. If she gets pregnant, mm-hmm. you miscarry. And that's a hard, hard experience, not only for her, but her husband and their family. And I think they already have a kid, right?
Yeah.
So like, and then, so for her to put that out there, I'm liking it. And when this is going to be another word I'm going to be using a lot tonight, normalizing, because it does normalize some part of this experience. You can't normalize the entire part of it, but some part like, okay, I'm not alone with it. So that's how I looked at it. I was like, yeah. What do y'all think?
I feel like, for me personally, I feel like it was a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's only because, again, like I'm not the type to share a lot of information on social media. Maybe one day I'll be able to be transparent enough like that, mm-hmm. to be able to do something like that. But again, she's a celebrity. And I think that was very noble of her to share that, because like you said, we see all the glamorous stuff she does, yeah. all the happy moments that they have. So for her to be able to have that moment of transparency and to show that side of her, like, it's not all great. I had something horrible happen, but I'm sharing this with you to let other people know, possibly, you're not alone. I went through this, and this is what I'm going through, and mm-hmm. someone can relate. So, mm-hmm. but again, people are so judgmental. That's one of the reasons why I hate the internet so much. People care way too much about things that it's just not your business. If you don't agree with it and don't like it, move past it. Yeah. That's it. It's that easy. But there's just some people that are just nasty. Even when she was sharing that she was pregnant, I saw comments of like people putting the pizza emoji underneath her pictures because of the Pizzagate scandal. So it was just like people... You weren't aware of the whole
sex trafficking, yeah, like that.
And Epstein, the whole thing, and they're saying that she was involved of it, okay. with
or
it,
supposedly, yeah, allegedly. So
yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So they were basically saying that's her Pizzagate baby, and like we're just being very ignorant then. So it's just like, damn if you do, damn if you don't. I don't know, but you gotta have tough skin. I feel like to be able to do something like that. So I applaud her for that.
I mean, I kind of looked at it as like, I didn't mind her sharing it because like you said, I'm one of the people that like, if I don't have a vested interest in it, I literally scrolled past it about 5 different times before I realized, oh, this is a thing. Mm-hmm. Like people are actually like having strong opinions and saying all this stuff. I literally saw the picture. I saw that there was a caption next to it. I saw what happened. I had my quick moment of feeling bad. Like, dang, mm-hmm. that's messed mm-hmm. up. And I kept scrolling because like, that's just not, I'm not really invested in John Legend and Chrissy Teigen. Like, you know, but as a human, you know, I felt bad for her, but I didn't, you know, have a reaction to it. Mm-hmm. As it pertains to like how I feel about it. I mean, if they want to share, that's cool. You know, I support anybody's decision on what they want to do, on how they want to grieve. I'll say for me, if that was my woman, my child, mm-hmm. I wouldn't have wanted that to happen. Mm-hmm. But that's just me.
You would. It sounds like both of you guys would have liked would have been a little bit more discreet.
Yeah,
that kind of,
or even if it was something. Time. Yeah. I was gonna say, even if it was something where it was just like, you know, not
that
in
was
the heat.
In moment, real time.
That's pretty what it much, seemed like. Yeah.
Like she basically was like tweeting as it was happening. Like, I can't believe we're going home without a baby.
I
came to the hospital pregnant. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I'm going home without a child. Like, so like it was kind of like a live.
I ain't even gonna lie. I cried when I saw her tweet that.
And
I shed a tear when I saw that, because that I just crap. that hit me hard. Like, oh my goodness.
That's pain. Mm-hmm.
And then like even like the picture that she posted, like it looked like a super emotional picture. Like she was really hurt. It was genuine. So I'm like, you know, yeah, that's something to actually be sad about. But I would need more time. I would need to be able to like kind of deal with it in my own way before I invited other people into that something that sacred, you know, something that personal in my life. Mm-hmm. So for me, I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have wanted my woman to do it. But I'm also not some world famous celebrity that shares every other intimate portion of my life, you know, with the public. You know, that's kind of how they cope.
Yeah, and I think that's the reason why I kind of pushed it my way, because y'all share all the glitz, all the glam, and that helps some people. But you have a base that this could help them with.
Showing some real shit happened.
So, I didn't know the other details about that. I don't even know what she really wrote underneath it. Other than what you guys just said. Mm-hmm. So,
I didn't really
That's really unfortunate, and that is an unfortunate common experience for during the birth pregnancy process. So that's unfortunate. That's sad.
Right. But yeah, we can segue away from that though, because that was kind of sad. And I don't want to be in here sad. But yeah, so Tony, will be taking the lead.
Yeah, because this is where my mind has kind of been for the last, I would say, week. And I think it is an expansive topic that, of course, we won't be able to hit all aspects of it. So I would really like to see what people say. But this whole idea in culture of being okay when it's not okay, and putting up that kind of airs and facade to make it seem like you're okay, for whatever reason. But the normalization, again, I'm going to be throwing that word a lot today, but the normalization of that, and even at times the expectancy, because when you ask somebody like, how are you doing? Not really. You might be like, how you doing? Oh, I'm really having a bad day. And this is the reason why. I'm like, oh, whoa.
Right.
Then, so, but like,
I was asking as a formality.
Yeah. But I just said even the use of that kind of formality, that kind of expression shouldn't be always formality. It should be a genuine question. So this is just some perhaps disclosure for me, just to try to challenge my okay when I'm not okay. I think I'm very blessed. Don't get me wrong. I'm very blessed. I am grateful that I have career education opportunities. I'm grateful I have a roof over my head that I supply and the means to make sure that happens. But I am not okay emotionally when it comes to my family. In a sense of, I have been living with a long time, a very, very, very sick mom who's not even 50 yet. And she, at one time in the last few weeks, she was basically in such a bad part of her illness where she was losing so much weight that I could see her kneecaps and I could see her hip bone because she was getting that thin. So walking away from that experience and then going to my dad, who was like getting stuff amputated and having heart problems, and then compartmentalizing that and walking away into my family from my family. And this is my reality. This is where my parents are. The doctors really can't help them right now. So it's really leaning on faith, but walking back out in the world, doing my work, my expectations, like I'm okay. In reality, I was not, and I still am not. So I didn't have really the language to explain that. And I think even though that is my experience with not being okay to be okay, I think that process is something a lot of us do. And
And I wanted to open up that kind of conversation because there are so many domains in our life that I think pain can exist that we try to conceal. And that's just emotional pain for me. Mm-hmm. There could be financial pain. There could be social kind of pain. There could be career kind of occupational pain that we try to act like we're okay. In reality, we're not. So I just wanted to open up, what were some reactions or what are some like thoughts when I say this, okay, not okay?
So for me, like the whole, just in general, like you said, there's like so many different facets where we kind of hide the different things that we're going through. Especially, you know, as it pertains to things that are negative. So even, you know, say like financially, mm-hmm. nobody wants to be at the point where they seem like they're needy.
Yeah.
They're, you know, they're becoming a burden to other people. Cause I'll tell you right now, I am a prideful person. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like I will be down to the negatives in my account. And mm-hmm. will not let somebody know that I'm like not doing well. If you ask me to go somewhere, I'll turn down an invite. Like, yeah, I just don't, you know, feel like going or something like that. Instead of, yo, I don't got it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's like, instead of me just being able to be okay with my current financial status, which, you know, I don't want to say, or to use your word, normalize being broke or normalize being financially unstable, but I should be okay to just like, yo, this particular week for this particular outing, I just don't have the means to do it. So mm-hmm. I'm going to sit this one out. But my pride will not just allow me to be like, yo, my account's in the negative. I need somebody to help me out. I can't do it. I will let everything in here shut off first before I ask for anything. These lights will be off. The cable will be off. You know what I'm saying? Like everything, I'll start sacrificing on my own. I would have to get to like the most extreme level of poor for me to ask for anything. And I probably still wouldn't.
I feel the same way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have way too much pride. I feel like that would make me weak. I feel like part of the way I feel and my response is from like childhood trauma of being embarrassed mm-hmm. when I was younger. I didn't like that feeling. So for me, it's, I'll do anything before I'll ever let somebody know or think I'm suffering. But it hurts me because, transparent right now, I'm not okay. I've probably for the past 2 weeks had a lot of ups and downs. These past 2 days, I've cried majority of the day.
Yeah.
So this is like the first moment I think that I haven't cried or felt an emotion like in a couple of days. But I won't tell anybody. I don't know. I just rather suffer in silence. And because a lot of that is too, I don't want to be a burden. I don't want to feel like, I guess I'm complaining. That's another thing.
Okay.
Again, I also too feel very blessed. I feel like I should be grateful and be giving gratitude because I have all the basic necessities. I have a roof over my head. I have a car. I'm able to pay all my bills. All the things that I should be doing, I guess, as an adult, I'm doing them. But I'm still not happy.
Yeah.
But then I feel ungrateful for feeling that way. So I guess in order to make me feel like, I guess I'm grateful, I just rather just not say anything at all.
And I think you guys pointed out like a few themes that I'm starting to see, not only myself, but in others, that's a common thread between a lot of people, is that that kind of pride is a common kind of like reason why people don't want to do it. And it was like, I don't want to show that I'm weak. I don't want to make it seem like I'm complaining or I'm a burden to somebody. And you rather than share that, knowing the benefit of sharing it and disclosing it and talking to somebody that you trust. It doesn't have to be like no professional help. Even if that is just what you want, go for it. But if you don't want to go to that level, talk to somebody you care about, or just disclosing in all honesty how bad it is when it's bad. And stop putting on that facade. When did that become, oh, I am weak? These are beliefs I have myself too. So like, mm-hmm. I'm not just like pointing you guys out, mm-hmm. but these are common things. Like, when did it become like, oh, I'm weak and everything like that, rather than I'm struggling, this is hard. And I think a common experience, like I was thinking, like a common human experience is struggling, is pain, that is a guarantee that you are going to experience when you are born into the day you die. You're going to experience some type of level of struggling. So if this is such a common experience for us, why aren't we normalizing it? Rather, we're normalizing the concealing of it. Uh-huh. You better not say nothing. And it's not even other people saying it. It's that own internal voice that I find. Why are you letting people know?
I can tell you one thing that Ty said that, like, I think plays a big role into it. She said, like, you know, a lot of it comes from, like, her childhood trauma, whatever. Yeah. Now, for me, it's the complete opposite. It wasn't that I had childhood trauma. When I was a child, and I'm speaking of when, like, we lived in Camden, mm-hmm. we were poor. Mm-hmm. Like, not to the point where, you know, we were on the street or nothing like that. But it was six of us in a two-bedroom row home. We had food stamps. You know, we had roaches everywhere, mice sometimes. Like, we ate basic, you know, like, government-issued food, like cream farina, Spam, and all that kind of stuff. Like, just random stuff that, like, looking back on it, I don't know if I look down on it or what, but a lot of the, it wasn't like I didn't have trauma in the moment. We had a good childhood. I was a happy kid.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, me, my brothers, we never knew the extent of how our parents were struggling. Mm-hmm. It was me becoming an adult and retroactively looking back on it that made me be like, oh, I don't want to be like that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, not even to, like, shame my parents or whatever, because they did, you know, move us to Lindenwall into a very big house and we all had our own rooms, kind of. And, you know, we were, like, well off, so to speak, you know, for a majority of our, you know, mm-hmm. upbringing. But just me, like, looking back, I'm just like, I don't ever want to be in a position where there's three people staying in one bedroom.
Yeah.
Where we're getting slices of pizza. No, you slice that one slice in half.
Yeah.
That's for both y'all. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was like little things like that I, like, started flashing back on, like, oh, we were doing that because we were poor, not just because that's how but we didn't know no better. So now as I get older and I so-called know better, now I'm like, okay, these are the things that I do not want. And I'm going to do whatever at all costs to not be in that position. And if I ever feel myself slipping into that position, I don't want to let nobody know.
But then I would also say at the sacrifice at times of your wellness.
Well-being. Yeah.
And I'm just saying, when I see myself doing that, I kind of challenge my thought, like, okay, are you actually being productive in this kind of moment? Are you actually, or are you just concealing one thing like a double-edged sword?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to hurt myself while I'm also trying to conceal this. And I'm just like, okay, I'm cleaning this up, but I'm opening up another wound right now. Because I think, see, and we all have stuff that I'm pretty sure that stems from childhood. And I'm not, that's not like what I'm like saying, like, unpack that shit. No, I'm not saying that. But I'm just saying, like, adverse childhood experiences are challenging, and it's a constant battle to keep them under wrap if you don't mm-hmm. know what you're doing, and they can rear their ugly head. And I think childhood experiences could be the reasons why we have these kind of defenses up, like, I'm not going to say anything. But I think to put it, and not this is for myself and anybody, but to challenge yourself, like, is it all just a childhood experience? Are there some behaviors I'm doing right now in the moment that is making me feel like I can't talk to anybody, or I can't really express that? And that's something I'm trying to put, like, can both of these exist at the same time? Can I have had some adverse childhood experiences, but can I also be experiencing something right now that has nothing to do with my childhood that is freaking hard? Mm-hmm. And neither one of these things I want to talk about because of the mindset I have for my childhood or whatever it is. However you want to approach it, the common theme is you rather sit with this pain alone, not letting anybody know, rather than letting somebody know. And I think we live in that kind of culture where, yeah, it's kind of like this unsaid, you better not say something, or
what happens in this house stays in this house.
Yeah, we live in that kind of culture, but then we also live in the same exact culture, but like, oh, I can't believe she actually went through with it. I can't believe I didn't even know he was going through that. And when it turns to self-harm or suicide, when that pain gets so unbearable and you don't have the language,
or they just turn to drugs
or all of that, and I'm just like, you are trying to conceal something. We aren't even taught the language how to effectively express that. And I can just say, for somebody who's going through, these levels of study, shit, I still don't have that language. And I have access to like the best research literature, the amazing kind of theoretical frameworks and stuff like that. And I'm like, we still haven't mastered that. And that is still a common thing that I guarantee if you get anybody, you know, in the same room and you really break down how are they, I'm pretty sure they can say in the last month, not that well because of something. And that's scary because that's such a risk. And then that's where I was kind of at. This is the reason why I kind of approached it from Christy. I'm happy you brought up Christy Teak. I don't know if you strategically do that.
No, I don't.
Because Christy be good. But like to look at what Christy Teigen kind of put out there, despite my own like first initial reaction, like me trying to change my thought. And I'm like, okay, let's normalize this. Like she is going through pain, and pain is, it doesn't always have to be such a scary thing to avoid. You can sit in it. You can kind of normalize it and understand that it will pass. But since she put that out there, because media, especially social media, but media in general, will make you think everybody's life is perfect. You make you think these celebrities' lives are amazing. Even if you say, well, we know it's not great, you still look at them in some capacity like it's better than mine.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In reality, it is not. It is literally not. One of the and I think I can disclose this. I think one of the things that years ago I used to work as a case manager, and we get referrals from the hospitals from people who just got released from discharged from, you know, a psychiatric unit, and they're in the community, and we have to go follow up them and see how they're doing. We would go to these, and this is me being young, Tony, like challenging some of the beliefs, go to the nice houses in Medford and Voorhees and Cherry Hill, these amazing houses where you got to like drive up mm-hmm. and drive through that bitch to get to where y'all at. And I'm over here like, y'all are, this is amazing. You go in that house, sometimes it's always nice, sometimes it's not. But one thing common, oh, y'all got problems. Oh, y'all are in pain.
See, that was one of the things I always struggle with. Like, okay, how do you... Just talked about your childhood and how you guys like struggled. I didn't have that issue growing up. Mm-hmm. Like I got what I wanted. I had everything. Like I did not know what struggle was at all. But emotionally, there was a lot of challenging situations that I had growing up. But I was always told because I didn't struggle in that aspect, what I was feeling was invalid. Because mm-hmm. I didn't struggle like that. So I had no room to feel those feelings or feel like I was going through something because I didn't have that, you know, that same shared struggle. Right. So that was one of the, another things that always shut me up because I was always the one that didn't have room to talk.
Well, I think even with that, I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
I think even with that, we tend to do that. We often invalidate our own selves by just saying the state one statement. Oh, it's hard, but oh, thank God I don't got it like that. Look on the bright side. You don't got it like this. Okay, mm-hmm. I know I don't have it like that. And I'm grateful I don't have it like that.
But my feelings still matter.
Hard. Mm-hmm. Right. This is hard. That is not, in my opinion, that is not a useful challenge by saying you don't have it as bad as this. Because it invalidates how you feel. And it kind of makes it seem like that should be your default of response. Mm-hmm. And that's another way of, in my opinion, pushing that own self-repression of your own feeling and then making you had the language to basically invalidate yourself, but you still don't have the language to say you're still not okay.
Right.
And I just feel that I think that can be self-destructive. Like, of course, there are some reasonable, I'm not going to say like that is just an absolute, but there are some reasonable ways, in my opinion, that this is a me talk heavy right now.
Do you think?
But like, there are some moments where it is, I believe, helpful to look alternatives like that. But to always use that as a default,
right,
or often even use that as a default, can be also destructive. Mm-hmm. And knowing how to balance your own self-talk, and which was going to like segue a little bit into this whole belief of, I was trying to like just, I was like in my mind about this. I'm like, why is it like this okay and I'm not okay? And I'm like, one of the things I kind of pointed out at myself to see is that I also fall victim to like self-blame. Like if you feel that you aren't meeting these markers that society, I didn't have a kid yet, I didn't get my first house yet, I can't, I'm still financing my car. These kind of things that perhaps people around you is not doing. Mind you, they could be going through some other shit that you're not doing. But if you're doing all that, you can easily self-blame yourself that you are the reason why it's like that. And so that's what I'm thinking. Like, do you guys ever fall victim to self-blame?
So I know I do for sure, because like with me, I'm always on the type time where it's just like, if it's just not on some stuff where I'm not on my P's and Q's at all time, then in a way it's kind of like, I am looking at it as like, yeah, this is my fault. You know what I'm saying? Like if I'd have did this, this wouldn't be happening. Mm-hmm. If I'd have finished school, this wouldn't be happening. If I had took high school more serious and got a scholarship, I wouldn't be able to look at my parents and be like, oh, well, y'all didn't help me out with paying for school because if I didn't do my part, you know. And I think the reason I do that a lot is because like, I'm just the type of person where I prefer to only let my emotions get tied to what I can actually affect or what I can, you know, have control over. So my thing is like, if I put the blame on me, then I can validate the reason why I'm so upset. Because otherwise, I don't want to be upset for something I can't control. That drives me crazy.
Can you tell me a little bit more? Because like that, I think that is like, that's hitting the nitty gritty of it. Like,
because like, all right. So for instance, like just, and this may seem small to somebody else, but this is my first year being a homeowner. So I'm adjusting to that. This is all new to me. Like I've been a renter, but being a renter and being a homeowner are two totally different, you know, scenarios. So, you know, I've been teaching myself to budget, you know, I don't need this. I'll go food shopping this week, you know, and just doing things like that. So it's like, I'm finally getting into a routine. It's like, all right, cool. My finances are going to be fine because, you know, this is what I pay for this, this, that, and that. And this is what my income is, you know, so I'm figuring it out. And then I get a notice in the mail. And it's like, hey, your taxes have just gone up $3,000. It's like, so I have to pay basically another $250 per month if I'm going to do it like over 12 months to my mortgage. And it's like, yo, I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, I didn't tell y'all to raise my taxes. Yeah. But you're like, now it's like, do I get upset at, you know, am I just going to, because it's an abstract thing. It's not like I can, you know, just be like, hey, Mr. Tax Person, you know, let's talk about this. No, taxes are just a thing. Everybody pays them. I knew what I was getting into when I signed that lease or signed, you know, them papers for my house. But for it to just happen unexpectedly first year, and now it's like, all right, now what I'm going to do? Like, I make good money, but do I have to, like, start working more? Yeah. Like I was making good money so I could, like, be chill and relax, and I thought I did it the right way. So, like, but in my mind, it's just I take it and I internalize it. Like, you know what? You signed up for this. This is what you wanted.
Yeah.
So you start putting it on you. Like, no, you wanted a house. You wanted to move out by yourself.
Oh,
you wanted to do all those things. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, so I'll be upset about it, but I'll put it on myself. I can't put it on the township. Like, what is the township? What is it? It's not a actual one person that I can be like, I'm blaming you. I'm mad at you. And I can release that anger and then I can just go on about my day.
Yeah.
No, it's something that like I have to deal with. So, you know what, Chris, you know, you start kind of talking to yourself like, this is what you wanted. So then now it's like, all right, well, you got to deal with it. But I'm not going to, you know, go out and be like, hey, y'all, you know, my taxes went up. If I start a GoFundMe, y'all going to help. You know what I'm saying? Like, what you going to do? You got to like lick your wounds and keep it moving. And like, it's like I said, that's like, you know, an abstract thing or more so just like a non personal type of thing to take blame, but it's real.
That's a good example,
yeah, though,
because it makes things very concrete for a lot of people to perhaps even relate to. And I think one common thing that if anybody points out self-blame, if you really sit back and try to look at it objectively, even though it's really hard to because you're going through it, so you're going to look at it subjectively, I'm pretty sure there are a lot of circumstances even in that were out of your control.
Of course.
So you gave two options, for example. You said, I can't get mad at the township. There's basically, I hear two options. Mm-hmm. I can get mad at myself. I can get mad at the township. And you said, since I can't get mad at the township, I can get mad at myself. And this is the reasons why I can get mad at myself. Rather than, I'm not going to say rather, but I think that could be helpful too, because it's grounding you in reality.
Mm-hmm.
Some things get hard. But also by also changing, like, life is unpredictable. This is going to be challenging, but is it impossible? And trying to see, like, I'm not completely responsible. The township, for whatever reasons, did what they did. What other reason or something else I could look at alternatively to take not all the self-blame, but most of that self-blame off right, myself, shift it. Because I'm not going to get anywhere emotionally, physically, probably with that level of blame and that level of blame on top of that whole, you know, repression of yourself, like repression of these negative feelings is going to make you go out and say, I'm all right. Like you even said, like, what am I going to do? Go out and say I'm having a hard time because my taxes went up and create a GoFundMe. And I think that's a comical relief. But in reality, you don't have to do that either. But you can honestly be like, whew, if I'm off tonight, guys, I am really having a hard time. This is not a good time for me to discuss it right now. But just if you guys could listen, or just if I decide to talk a little bit more, please don't look at me any kind of other way. It's just I'm having a hard time and I don't know when I can shake this. But just perhaps if you could check in on me a little bit more. And that's just my way. And this is also, I don't think, adequate because I don't even have the language to do that. But what do you have any kind of thoughts about that?
I'm struggling with the self-blaming because I find myself doing that often. And I feel like even in situations where I know it is completely out of my hands, I still have to find a way, I guess, to make it make sense in my head that, like, I did something wrong. Like, that's the only reason why it didn't work is because I did something wrong. And I don't know why that's the first thing my brain goes to.
Like, it defaults
to I don't know why, but the only way that I can make a situation make sense in my head for me is that I have to self-blame and say that I did something wrong. I'm trying to find, I guess, exercises to reverse my thinking, to figure out more, I don't know, to speak more positively to myself. I guess that would be thing to do. I'm not really sure, but
yeah.
I guess that's what I'm looking to figure out, ways that as soon as I'm having one of those negative thoughts or, Tyon, this is your fault, this is why this is happening, I can be like, no, again, this is a situation that's out of my control. Mm-hmm. What is that saying? Something like, once you realize that the things that people do have less to do with you and more to do with them.
Yeah.
You know, that's when it all falls to perspective.
Especially as it pertains to, like, relationships.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And that's when you gain more perspective. So I guess I'm just trying to figure that out for myself.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point because I'm trying to do the same thing. I'm trying to look. I can't change the fact that my parents are sick. And I can't. Mm-hmm. Changing my thought to make it seem like they're not sick or they are well is minimizing what's going on. Mm-hmm. They aren't. Mm-hmm. But I think one benefit I could do to myself is perhaps make my thinking a little bit more flexible. Like, they aren't well. I mean, they aren't well, but they are here now in the moment. So what can you do to make yourself feel a little bit better with, you know, your mom being here? Your mom still being here. They're not well at all. So what can you do to make this
situation? And also make the best out of the situation itself in general, right? Yeah.
And then also, I think then this is where the challenging comes in, is like noticing that your default of self-blame is only going to make this even worse. So how about we practice removing that, accepting the reality right now of what's going on, not minimizing it, and just proceed mindfully and see, I'm not going to be perfect with this, but I know the other direction is going to hurt me worse. So, and I think that's where I'm kind of.
And a long time ago, so Complicated Simplicity did not start off as a podcast. It started off as a blog. And the very first blog entry that I wrote was, it was called Contentment Is Not Complacency. And that came from a conversation that stemmed from when I just, like, it was literally kind of what we're talking about right now.
Oh.
Where I was, like, just home depressed. And everyone has a friend, or hopefully has a friend, that can just sense when something's off, whether it be with your energy, your communication level, you know, anything like that or whatever. And my person happened to be Eric at the time. you know, well, y'all know, yeah, the Eric, listeners yeah. probably don't know, but it was, yeah, it was Eric. And like, he just came over one day and we were supposed to go out and like, you know, I was just not myself. And we ended up just like sitting in the house and just having like a straight heart to heart, never made it out the house. Like, and we just like talked real man to man about just like where we're at right now. And like, I kind of got that from him because it was just like me just realizing like, just because I, you know, it, me being content with where I'm at, like you said, like when we be like, oh, I'm blessed. I do have a car. I do have my job. I do, you know, have the basic necessities, mm-hmm. you know, those type of things. I can be content with that mm-hmm. and not feel like I'm and not be complacent. Mm-hmm. You know, like, mm-hmm. yes, I'm going to want more. Of course, I want better for myself. Of course, I don't want to feel like I'm struggling. Of course, I don't want to be in this funk forever, but I'm doing okay. Mm-hmm. You know, especially if I'm like, if I have my health mm-hmm. and, right. you know, I don't have any issues that could land me in prison and all these type of things. Like,
right.
things aren't that bad. Mm-hmm. So why am I putting this weight on myself where it's like, you're not doing enough. Mm-hmm. You're doing okay. You know, mm-hmm. like you said, people may be doing certain things at this age. Like, I'm 33. I don't have children. Mm-hmm. Most of my, like, well, not most of my friends, but a lot of my friends do. That was always something I envisioned myself starting early, like probably 10 years ago.
Right.
So like, you know, there's just like all these things where it's like, I'm not being complacent by accepting where I'm at right now. And I think that's like a major thing that people need to start or enhance mm-hmm. in their lives is just like, listen, it's okay to accept where you're at and not get to the point where you have no desire to move forward beyond this. You're not losing your desire by being content. You can still want more, but I think also that want for more gets replaced with you have to have more. You better not rest until you have more. You're not good enough if you don't get more. Once we start replacing that just simple desire for more with these negative things that we put on ourselves or that society puts on us, that's when the depression kicks in.
Yeah.
The anxiety kicks in. Just the self-doubt, the self-blaming and all those type of things kick in. And like, I got to a point where I just stopped moving on everybody else's schedule.
Yeah.
And once I like put myself on my own clock and stopped worrying about trying to impress people and all those type of things, like I moved back home with my dad for 2 years mm-hmm. as a grown up, like 30 years old, living, you know, at home, so to speak, because mm-hmm. I had other things that I wanted to do and I didn't really care how everybody else felt about it. And that's just like how I think the whole like self, if you replace the self blame and the self doubt and all that kind of stuff with just like, I don't have the same, like I said, just not being on everybody else's time. Mm-hmm. Like, set your own expectation and those type of things. I think it alleviates a lot of the mm-hmm. pressure because like now it's not coming from the outside. So you can maintain it. Once again, only dealing with what you can control. I can control this. I can't control what everybody else wants for me or wants, you know, expects me to do.
Yeah.
That's why I think it's very important for everyone to figure out what happiness means to them uh-huh. and step out of looking at what happiness means for everyone else. I know that's one of the things that had me so in my head and wrapped up is because one of the things I was struggling with is living the life that my mom wanted for me. Uh-huh. And I guess not having her to validate or accept me for how I'm living my life right now, that really hurt me. Mm-hmm. And that led my life of fear and of, I guess, not feeling worthy and feeling like I need to be and do all these things in order to, I guess, make her happy. But realizing that making her happy is not making me happy. Yes. And that's not my happiness. So it's really, really important for everybody to, again, like, step away from social media and step away from all these outside voices and really find in your core what happiness means to you, because it's not going to look like that to everybody else, and stay true to that. It's very hard. I sometimes, and maybe I'm just speaking for myself, to just be honest with myself and stay true to what myself, because I'm looking at all these outside distractions and what everybody else wants for me and what everyone else is doing for them. And I'm thinking like, well, they're doing that and they're happy, then that must be what I need to do as well. But no.
Yeah. Right, because once you get your own shine. You're still going to be wanting for more, because that's not for you.
Yes, and your tribe will be there. Whatever that happiness is for you, those people that are meant to be there will be there. The happiness, the life that you want is all there, but you just have to stay solid. You just have to stay solid and through the growing pains. Yeah. I think that's what's hard, is it's a lot of growing pains and it's never going to end. And you just have to stay grounded and remember the reason why you're here and what you're looking to pursue.
You know what else I think, Tony? I think, like, you know, like you was talking about how, like, you know, not everything comes from childhood trauma. I think where a lot of the anxiety and those type of things comes from is that in a lot of cases, even how you're saying, like, you know, you don't have the language yet. Most times we have things that we can, like, call back on or recollect or have a source of information from to deal with certain issues. I think in 2020 and, you know, the years to come, there's so many new issues that there's no point of reference on how to deal with and overcome, that, like, people just are kind of lost. Because, like, even with this whole pandemic stuff, we can't look to our parents and be like, yo, how do you deal with a pandemic? They didn't experience it. Like, the last major one was in, what, 1921 or some crap like that? Most of those people are gone. And if they're alive, they probably aren't, you know, the best communicators because they're old at this point. So, like, when there's no point of reference or source of this is how you deal with this and everything's going to be fine, it's like it's like learning on a job. You know what I'm saying? It's like when you get hired for a position and you think everything going good, then they're like, oh, you have a new job description. Mm-hmm. All right, so, you know, when I'm going to go to training? Yeah, we ain't got time to train you. We need you to just go do it. Like, what do you mean? I don't know what I'm doing, fam.
Aren't we considered the millennials? Yeah, or whatever. Yeah. I mean, we've gone through a lot.
We really have.
Just in the... And us being 30, mm-hmm. you know, barely in our 30s, mm-hmm. like, we've already experienced like a lot. Yes. 9/11, this pandemic, like, it's a lot that has happened within our lifetime in a short amount.
All during very crucial years of our
lifetime. Yes, right. Exactly. So I feel like, yeah, we've experienced a lot. So
again, this is all beautiful. I'm not trying to be like beautiful. I love this, but, like, I'm not trying to challenge, but if we have this knowledge and if we have this awareness, why do we still perhaps act like it's okay when it's not okay? If we know that these are the realities, we sound like we're a little bit more flexible. Because
it's uncomfortable.
Because it's uncomfortable.
Period.
Okay.
Like, that's just, for me, it's uncomfortable. Asking for help is uncomfortable.
And what is, I'm sorry, this is, what is his name? Because what is, in my opinion, uncomfortable? Yes. What is wrong with temporary discomfort?
I don't think that people feel like it's wrong. I actually don't. Now that I'm thinking about it, like, a little bit more, I don't think people necessarily feel like, oh, this is a wrong feeling. I just think people rather deal with it on their own. I think it's just more uncomfortable to invite more people into your uncomfortableness. Mm-hmm. Like, if my house was dirty right now, like, we're recording in my living room. If my house was filthy, I wouldn't want to invite you into it.
So if
you but I would deal with it myself, you know, like, because it's my house. But I'm not going to invite other people into my filth, because now I'm going to be more conscious of how dirty it is.
I feel
now when you sit down, I'm gonna be like, whoa, I hope don't nothing crawl from under him. You know what I'm saying? Like, so you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm looking at it like, all right, well, I may be able to put up with it, but allowing other people to put up with it along with me, nah, I'm not willing to do
and
that.
And I feel like the misery loves company. Like, I'd rather be miserable by myself. So I'd rather just keep my distance. And if I'm going through something, I'm just going to keep my distance. I won't allow nobody in. I don't let nobody know what's going on. 9 times out of 10, I personally keep my distance from people just because I know that I am on an emotional roller coaster, and I don't want to bring that energy to anybody else. Mm-hmm. So I feel like maybe I'm, I feel like I'm protecting people other in people. A sense from my bad energy in a way when, I don't know, I guess that's me looking at it negatively when I could just be talking about it and we could connect and realize that we're both going through it and we can just bounce off of each other and help each other. But I don't know. I guess I just look at it again, being weak. I have too much pride. Mm-hmm. And if I'm going through it, let me just go through it by myself and I'll come back when I feel more level headed.
Right. And also, I feel like people don't, my, another thing to add on to what mm-hmm. Ty said, trust is a big mm-hmm. thing for me.
Oh, yes.
So, huge thing. I don't know how people are going to carry what I tell them. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know a few solid people. And that's why when people are like, Chris, you got so many friends. I'm like, yeah, I got a lot of people I'm cool with, you know what I'm saying, that I, you know, that I bang with, whatever. But mm-hmm. like, as far as people that I would like share my most darkest, deepest, intimate, whether secrets, insecurities, struggles, and those type of things with, there's very few people that I feel comfortable going to. And it's not necessarily because something that they may have done to me or information that I share with them that they share with other people, but just the simple fact that they've shared information that I probably wasn't supposed to know. Mm-hmm. So now it's like, all right, well, if you telling me this person's business, if I tell you mine, my business is going to be out there. Mm-hmm. So I think the fact that, like, you know, people don't always have people that they can go to that they trust, that they can be solid with, I think that creates a huge barrier and impediment. So I don't think it's more so that people think that it's wrong to be in these spaces, but you don't have, I personally don't have the trust to always share that because I don't have the confidence that it's always going to stay where it needs to stay. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big thing too.
That part.
and I think I definitely agree, like, with both of y'all. And I think that's where a lot of this can be very intricate. Like, how do we even process this? How do we begin to do it? And I was just trying to go into this, even with myself, with my, like, trying to build my own self-compassion towards what's going on, realizing my limits and my perceived incapabilities and trying to sit with that and normalize that, which was, that was my goal. I said, don't try to find reason in what's going on. Rather, learn to sit with it and to normalize it so that way you don't avoid it and run away from it, however you do. And then also find language so that way you can communicate it effectively to yourself and others when you need to. And I just think that was a really building process. I mean, that was a fundamental part of my own maturity and building, because I agree. I don't trust everybody to tell them when I'm not okay. And I do disclose certain things I do feel comfortable getting out there. But then, like most internal battles, I know that there's only a selected few that I feel comfortable saying that. But even when I can, you know, determine who those people are and allocate, like, that this is the time I'm going to spend saying it to them, when I get around them, I still have a hard time expressing it because it's so uncommon for me to even get this far and then talk about it. And you know what I'm trying to say? It's so uncommon. I don't spend a lot of time telling you that I'm not okay, because I usually spend some time telling you that I'm not. So, and I'm just like, even when I do identify those people, and even when I do identify my own limitations in that expression, do you even know how to still do it? And I find that still is a deficit of mine. So, and I'm starting to find, like, common themes with people with it. And I think it was, especially I'm really on a, like, a whole Black mental health kick. Like, really. And I hope I stay on this for the rest of my damn life. But, like, I think, Chris, you kind of alluded in the beginning, like, you know, some of the environments you probably grow on. And it's so easy, in my opinion, for me to blame my parents. And my mom had sent me a quote one time with this, like, don't be careful when you blame me, because it makes it seem like you assume that I knew better. And I'm like, damn, you kind of didn't either.
I feel like that's another especially part of growing
pains. Really think about, like, how old they were when we were kids. And you start realizing, like, oh, I'm that age.
I'm past.
Right, I'm way past that.
But I feel like you only realize that, I mean, once you begin, like, become a mature adult, when you're 18, 16, and you're going through whatever you're going through, your parents is all you are, all you have to go off of life. That's who's teaching you. So it's like a struggle. Like I understand that, you know, there's no manual book with parenting at all.
There's no manual, not a universal one.
Yeah, I mean, there's no one for life. Like it's
because it's ever evolving and it's ever changing.
Yeah,
I'll say this though, Tony, because I was over here thinking about like, all right, where did I learn to kind of mask, you know, when things are going wrong and all that kind of stuff. And then I like, I'm starting to realize I learned it everywhere. So I learned it. It's ingrained. Yeah. So religion, you know, I learned it there. If you really think about it, like I don't know how y'all grew up, but like I was always taught like, go to God. So it's like, all right, I can go to God, but in a physical sense, God's not going to talk back to me. You know, I don't have these comforting, I may get affirmations some kind of way or something, but like, I don't have nobody talking back to me. Yeah. This is like kind of feeling like a time. There's like a one sided conversation going on right now, which, okay, like it, I get it off and then I go out into the world and, you know, I put on my armor, you know, as you know, the church people would say, and you know, that like, even those, what are those analogies or so to speak, those are like, oh, you put on the armor, like, no, conceal, I need to be vulnerable.
Protect yourself from all that stuff. Yeah.
Then I look at sports. I grew up playing sports my whole life. If I get hurt on the field, it's not like they're like, oh, lay down. It's like, no, you better get up.
Yeah.
Play hurt. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, unless your leg is falling off, you get up and you keep playing. Mm-hmm. It's like, nah, I'm hurt, bro. Like I need you to take me out the game. Like, I'm really in pain. Like, something may really be wrong. Like, I play with broken bones, all kind of stuff. Because I've been taught to keep the pain in. You fight through it. And you don't tell the trainer that, you know, you broke your finger, because then they're going to make you stay out the game. Just wrap it up. You'll be all right. So I learned it there. You know what I'm saying? Like, I learned the whole, if, you know, something's going on in this house, it stays in this house.
Yeah.
You don't go out and tell all our business and all that kind of stuff. So I could be hurting. I could have seen something, or something could have happened to me, or whatever the case may be. I'm not going to tell the school principal or counselor or, you know, my friends. That kind of stuff. Yeah, I'm not telling anybody that stuff, because this is what goes on in our house. So, like, it's like you've been conditioned from all angles to suppress and to keep things in and to just keep moving forward and keep fighting, and things are going to get better. Because that's also another thing of religion, is where they just like, you know, it's going to get better. Light at the end of the tunnel. Like, it's just the everything that we hear, the slogans, you know, like everything is just like, it'll get better. It'll be fine. You just got to get through it.
And I think the challenge with that is sometimes it doesn't get better, and that's okay. that's the process of life. You lose things, you gain things. But I think how pervasive that is in our culture, I think, now I don't want to like beat it down, because there are some very key components that can help build resilience in people with some of those lessons. But to get it at all angles, it's like, oh, this is how I should be navigating the world, and this is how I should be navigating my emotions. And it's just like, no. There are some resilience components that can really make you, you know, withstand some of the blunts of life. But you cannot withstand all the blunts of the life by yourself. Mm-hmm. Quiet. You will snap.
Mm-hmm.
You will snap. And whatever snap looks like for you, which is the most unfortunate part, is it's like, that's why it's so surprising. You would have never known he was going through that. And by all means, you cope whatever way that you cope, and you deal with your pain whatever which way that you deal with it. But to also be aware that, hey, I know my limitations is I can't keep this long quiet. I need to talk to somebody, and this is how I'm going to talk to them, and this is my language I can use. You can navigate however much you want to do that for yourself. I think for each person it will be different, and that's great. But to become so rigid, like, I'm not going to say something, or I am always going to say something, like, oh, that's not realistic.
Right.
And I don't know if that's really functional either. Like, on some real shit, I don't want to hear about your problem every goddamn day.
Right.
And I don't want to hear that.
Because it's exhausting.
It's exhausting. And I know if I'm hearing from it all the time, for like the last year, every day, I imagine what you're doing to your damn self. This is your reality.
Right.
This is your mind. Of course, people want to go. Of course, people are going to want to tap out.
Right.
That's the stress all day. Mm-hmm. So.
So as a solution, though, because even with what you said, where like, you know, you don't always want to hear that kind of stuff, you know, especially coming from somebody that, you know, may have created their own chaos. Mm. There was like this whole thing of normalizing that, I guess we're just going to call it this episode. This is the normalizing episode where it was like normalizing, like asking people like, hey, you know, I'm going through something. I would like to discuss it with you. Are you in a place where you're able to receive, you know, what I, you know, need to put off, you know, or get off my chest? And I think that's like, even that itself, using that as a precursor, creates like a negative connotation where it's like, you are leading with, I may potentially be a burden to you. I may potentially, you know, put something heavy on you that you may not be able to receive. And I think that's why, like you said, it comes off negative. So like when you're trying to use the language, like I feel like just even the thoughts around it, it just creates a negative aura that, mm-hmm. you know, you don't really know how to get those words together.
It still mm-hmm. sounds uncomfortable.
Right. Like it just doesn't have a way for it to. I would want somebody to find a way to make it normal.
I would too. That's why I brought this up.
But I don't know how. You know what I'm saying? Like I really don't. And maybe there's some, like, if anybody listening has some self help books that they didn't listen, that they done found and, you know, want to refer us to, please.
I think that is very, there's something poetic about that. Like you can create your own internal library of a bunch of resources and strategies you can to manage a bunch of that. Like you can have a self-help book, but like whatever you learn out of it, you're going to find something that connects and you're going to put it in your own like library. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important. And I think whatever works for Ty is going to be completely different than whatever works for Chris, be completely different from working with me. So I don't mm-hmm. think there's always a universal, easily generalizable kind of solution, because we're all experiencing this human existence through different lenses. So I think unfortunately that it won't be like that, but I do also think there is something very beneficial and therapeutic you can get from talking about it to somebody you trust when you need to.
Do you think everyone needs to identify one person that they should go to?
What do you think, Tony?
I don't know. I don't know because what if you just put all that on one person and for whatever reason that person isn't your person anymore and that was your only way of coping? Yep. Then mm-hmm. it can get chaotic because you're like, oh shit, my person, the person that helped me cope, the person that I told everything to, isn't that person anymore. So what do I do
or
now?
They're no longer here.
Yeah,
anymore.
That could freak you. I don't know. So. Maybe
I don't know about a person, but perhaps mm-hmm. a system that I go to this person when I need to, I don't know, like my smart professor friend or something like that. And I go to them because this man is always good at building something. And I know if I got something to stress with that or like creating like solutions for that, I go to him. But then I'll go to somebody else for like a little bit more emotional support. My friend, she might not have all the answers, but homegirl can listen her ass off and she can reflect back mm-hmm. accurately. Uh-huh. And I go to somebody else because just to bullshit and cut up because I need a good distraction. And then I can explain that. So I think for me, finding a system, not just one sole person, because I think that's so risky.
Mm-hmm.
That's so risky. But then also making sure I'm a part of that system. What are you going to yourself for?
Uh-huh.
And noticing that, like you were saying, there are some things that's good that you keep to yourself. And I'm going to keep that consistent because last time I might need to take a break because I need some type of process myself and I'm not okay. But for me to verbalize that I'm not okay and then learn that this is something I can process with myself and identify what things I can go to other people for, I think that creates a system that you can, just in case one part falls apart or one person falls apart, I can replace that one little need I need.
Right.
It's not making everything collapse.
Yeah, it doesn't ruin the entire system.
Mm-hmm.
I like what you, the way that you put it together. Because me personally, I don't ever have one person. Mm-hmm. But when I did, it's kind of like my one person that I would go to for anything was Eric.
Mm.
And then now he's in the Air Force, he's gone. So I can still reach out to him, but you know, that man got his own life, you know, he in a whole nother state, you know, doing whatever he's doing. So it does create like a kind of like a void, like a loneliness where it's just like, all right, I can't deal with this. I don't have the person I normally can go to. So now it creates this like isolation. And I think that isolation is where like a lot of the unwillingness to either normalize things comes from, because that's when you start to live in your own head. That voice in your head is normally not a positive one.
And it's very powerful.
It's super loud. Powerful. It's loud. Right.
I wouldn't even say like it's loud, but it's quiet as fuck.
Yeah, it can be.
Because I can do something and realize that it's not even there at times.
It's like that silence is deafening type thing.
Yeah. So like that's my experience with it. I don't want to just take that away from you. But like it could be loud, it could be silent, it could be both. And that's scary because that's so unpredictable.
Mm-hmm. And it's always there. Like you can literally be fine. Like I remember one day I was fine. And I got in the shower and I'm just like in the shower washing up. And then like out of nowhere, I was just like,
yeah.
Yo, that was me like, the past 2 days. What? I'm just like, I was just washing dishes and then I just found myself crying. I'm like, I don't even know. Start why
dropping
I'm crying.
Tears on the plates.
Like, I don't know if that's a dishwater or what. But we are here.
Yeah, I mean, then you just start looking around and like, and saying, I'm about to get all psychological with it, but like even sometimes, like you just start looking at the walls different, like the walls start looking like a cage.
It distorts your reality.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think, wow, that is a really good a metaphor. Like it's like a cave, and it can literally feel and look like a cave. That's a good point. That was a curveball, Chris. That was some deep shit.
No, man,
that
be,
was a cave. It does.
I'll be going through it sometimes.
Yeah, but like that's I think that is that's the reality of the experience. I don't know. I'm still I would like to hear like what people do listen and when if they got this damn far. But like if
it ain't even that bad. We good.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Okay. But I was like even wondering like what are because again, having that kind of system, but then also I think there's an importance of networking with that system too. Like in a sense of, I love my colleague, my friend or my associate, whoever it is, my family member, whatever it is, for this support I need for this, because I know they're reliable for this, but then even also challenging their competence with it or their reliability with it. Can I find somebody better and more effective in that kind of moment? Or have I just grown past this experience? You're still going to be my friend. Right. I just found somebody also else to help meet me in that kind of need too. And I think that is a perfect way of being selfish. That's okay for your own needs.
It is.
What you thinking?
So it creates a separate set of issues. Mm. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. I'm literally one of those people where like, if that's what you need to do for you, go for it.
Yeah.
Like, because in a lot of facets of life, you do need to be selfish as it pertains to your mental and physical wellness. But a lot of people that you'll have in your life aren't able to adjust just because you did.
Mm-hmm.
And they deal with those adjustments in different ways. Some people are just so solid with you that they can like see that it's beneficial for you and they can just keep it moving and it don't affect nothing. Other people feel slighted. They feel like, you know, you're changing and not necessarily for the better because you're not inclusive of them. Mm-hmm. In certain areas, if you find somebody, God forbid, it's somebody new like that, just like nobody knows. And like now you're confiding in them.
Yeah.
And you know, now
it's territorial.
Yeah. You know, they get territorial. They tell you being fake and, or they feel like, you know, like how can you, you know, go to this person and be that open with them? I've been your friend for 15, 20 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, you feel like you can't come to me. Now it's like creating this separate set of issues that you didn't anticipate just because you wanted to get yourself better. Mm. Or you found somebody who's a better listener.
That's true. It can get tricky.
It's so complicated.
Mm-hmm.
It should be so simple.
I knew it.
You're so corny.
I couldn't help it. He set it up. He threw it up in the air. I just caught it and slammed it.
I don't know. This is interesting. I do want to also like thanks, because this did help me start that kind of process of normalizing it. Mm-hmm. There's something very comforting knowing that you're not the only one going through not struggles or pain, but immense struggle or immense pain right now. Mm-hmm. And it's also comforting too to know that despite that, y'all still try to put on that kind of like, oh, so y'all way of doing it, y'all kind of know that it's not good either, but y'all still do it. So I'm not alone with that either. Mm-hmm. So I'm not alone with the pain. I'm not alone with the defense. So I'm mm-hmm. like, okay, tribe. Yes.
The struggle crew.
Yes.
Right. Oh.
Yo, not trying to be in that crew.
No.
Struggle crew.
I hate it here.
But I think people are like at least trying to normalize it because like now people are making
it's a lot of mental health conversations. Cool.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like it's definitely a lot of conversations going on and people are like kind of pushing people to therapy. Mm-hmm. You know, so they're kind of making it so that it's more mainstream. Mm-hmm. And taking the stigma out of it. And which I've seen great. It working. Mm-hmm. You know, I know a lot of people and it's funny because you always see like the people that kind of like try to sneak it in, like yeah, what my therapist said, and like nigga, you never even said you was in therapy, like but now all of a sudden it's you know my therapist, like all right, cool, that's what's up. I see you trying to like you know just slide it out there that you're doing it and you're doing well. You know what I'm saying? So, but if that is what makes people comfortable as opposed to just being like, hey y'all, I'm in therapy, you know, so I'm not going to be available on certain days. That's fine too.
However you do it.
Right.
However you do it. Just also, and I remember I said like, the, for me, my goal wasn't even to like, you should be out, just out telling everybody this. No, you don't have to do that. But I think the goal again is finding that language to communicate it and to also normalize that, yeah, I'm in therapy. And the fact that he was able to, yeah, okay, good. And keep moving. I'm like, yes, normalizing that shit.
I saw on Twitter, somebody was like, my therapist said is the new my mom said. I'm like, yeah, just trying to get that off. But I don't know, man. It's just so, so much. Mm-hmm. It's so much. And it don't seem like it's getting any easier. Mm-hmm. I think that's the frustrating part is that you would think that once you start dealing with certain issues and once you do start sharing your struggles and all that kind of stuff, that eventually it's like, all right, well, now I'm... Everybody looks for this. It's kind of like the pandemic thing. It's like, oh, when is it going to be over? We don't know.
We don't.
You know what I'm saying?
That
like
uncertainty whoops your ass.
Right.
Right. But life always happens. It's never going to stop happening. So like even once you get to a spot where you're like, all right, this is it. Like I'm happier. Something's going to happen. But that's why I feel like it's on you to find ways to cope healthy. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where his system will probably come into play.
Right.
But also the thing is with the system, though, the system is always going to need new parts.
All the time. It's that the level of maintenance that you got to put into your system to make sure like it's always a viable alternative is going to be, so that's some work. But I just think for me, that's work I'm willing to commit to because that's keeping me going. So I do think... We are always guaranteed a struggle. And I try to, like, I say, okay, if I'm not okay, like, how am I, how, Chris, you asked the question, like, okay, what are we going to do? Like, what are some ways we could do about it? So I try to pick a struggle. Like, I got five struggles. I'm like, I mean, a mirror brushing my teeth in the morning. Like, bitch, pick a struggle. Pick one. And I'm like, shit. So because it's just like, there's something so overwhelming about having multiple heavy stressors in your face all the time. But there's something for me comfortable knowing I at least knock one of those stressors out. So if I can just pick one and get it over with and just tackle it, I don't know, it just helps me feel more in control. And control is what I'm typically missing for this kind of feeling. I don't have control at times over my emotional reaction. I don't have control over any of that. And this is the reason why I'm concealing it, because I don't want you to see how much I am not in control. I am not, and I fucking hate it. So, yeah.
So how do you feel about, because everybody has their coping mechanisms, right?
Yeah.
So for people that use, let's say, weed.
Oh, so you want to talk to me? Let's talk about it. Let's get into it.
Wasn't talking about Ty. However, since we're here, fly Ty.
I try to smoke it away.
You try to change it with your hair. You get your hair done tomorrow.
Get it done tomorrow. Oh, stop talking about me.
Anyway, so like, because a lot of people will say that that's just like automatically a negative thing. Like, oh, you're like, you know, going to something else to, and it's taking you to an altered mind state. And, you know, you're creating a dependency and all that kind of stuff, whatever. Do you think, you know, since you have actual letters, you know, behind your name to actually answer these kind of things, do you think that it's always a negative? Because I kind of
don't. I will just default to the research, mm-hmm. and it's very mixed.
Okay.
There's so much that we don't know. There's so much that we kind of do know that it at times can dysregulate certain things. It's not always a reliable source. And at times for certain people in certain presentations, especially depending on medications, it makes it kind of worse. Mm. But there's so much nuance to that literature. Like there's so much, the sample was only this and they controlled the sample so much that it's not a realistic sample outside of a lab. Or it's not representative of certain populations and the way they deal with it. So I think it's very, very, very mixed. But I do also like the literature that's showing that marijuana has some therapeutic value, that it can help alleviate some forms of pain, physical pain, psychological pain, to the point where that's why certain states even allow, depending on the certain documentation, the signatures you get, and your reasoning, that you can get that kind of like medically prescribed for outside of physical ailments, like things like such as depression and anxiety. Mm. So there is some evidence that shows that it is a reasonable source. But I think anything that can become, what's a nice word to say with this? I'm just going to say anything that can become addictive. Yeah. Because marijuana, I'm uncertain, but I don't know if it has an addictive quality. I don't think it does. But anything that can become behaviorally addictive to the point where I am feeling bad, therefore I must go to it, becomes that compulsory kind of response where you need that in order to feel good. I think anything like that is dangerous because, like, if I need to default to something, what do you do in the absence of it? What do you do when you can't get it? And then you're faced with something. And that's what we typically find, not with people with marijuana, but like people with other kind of substances like opiates and benzos. Like when they come in and you remove that, which some of them can be kind of deadly if you remove it. But if you remove that, they are literally now, not only if I'm getting rid of like the physiological response I'm having, now I'm confronted with my thoughts. And this is what I've been trying to conceal the whole time. Mm-hmm. This is what I've been avoiding. I can't do this right now. And that's where the kind of distress picks through. I'm like, yes, it was making you physically feel good, but it was taking away those kind of thoughts you had. Now, in the absence of it, shit gets real, like real. So that's my thoughts of it. Again, look at your own, whoever listens to this, look into the research literature yourself. I'm not no expert when it comes to that, but that is what my understanding of the psychological and medical research on it about it. What are you looking at?
Okay.
Well, someone who is actively participating. Okay.
Okay.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk.
I 100% agree with you, Tony. So I was late to smoking. Okay. I didn't start smoking until like my early 20s. Mm. And I started smoking because I did not know how to confront the things, my depression. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to deal with it. So I used weed to cope. And I was coping for a while. And just recently, I stopped.
Oh, pat on the back.
Okay. Pat me on the back. Because I saw that I was relying so heavily on that to make me feel okay in the moment. But then when that high was gone, now what? I still feel like crap. I still have these same thoughts. I don't know how to cope. The only thing that makes me feel good is smoking.
Yeah.
And I got dependent on that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's addictive, but I guess you said behavior, like the act of just smoking.
I don't think it's chemically addictive.
I don't think so either. Yeah. But I think it was just knowing that was the go-to. Like, I can just do that. That's what I would want to do.
It comes a compulsory kind of response where you have to default like that in order to feel good.
Right.
Like in the absence of it, you don't. And therefore, right, exactly. That behavior.
I don't want that. Like, that sounds like it's controlling me. And that for me, I don't want that. Like, now I'm like, all right, you're grown. Let's figure out how to cope in a healthy way.
Yeah.
Without having a substance or having things, because I'm not always going to have weed to cope. Yeah. And nor do I always want to have that to cope. So, but definitely there's other moments when I'm in my right space, mm-hmm. when I'm not so sad or so depressed that I can indulge mm-hmm. and I'm groovy. I'm chilling.
So you found but a balance.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do now. Uh-huh. That's what I'm doing now. I'm working more on my mental health. And finding healthier coping mechanisms outside of weed. But I'm not saying that I'm cutting it off completely because I do enjoy, but I don't want to indulge for all the wrong reasons.
And that's what I think. There's a complete distinguish. I think you're distinguishing it from more of, and I use this word very loosely. This is not a clinical term in this kind of way, but like essentially a loose word of dependency versus I'm no longer depending on it. I am using it recreationally.
Yes.
So, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I do want to highlight this. I'm happy you brought up the marijuana. Mm. But one thing that I will tell you guys about, the research literature really suggests that that's not the only thing that you should be assessing for. When people come in, or like typically a lot of people too, when we all try to regulate our emotions in some kind of way. And some people default to marijuana. That's just, you know, common now. So mm-hmm. like, and it's not even common. It's more, we can talk about it freely and stuff like that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of things that behaviorally people, you know,
promiscuity.
Become. Yeah. But I'll talk about, like,
oh, my bad.
Like, I know
people be wilding when they be like, man, I'm just going to sex anything.
I know. Yeah. I'm about to say, that's going to bring up the, there are some behavioral kind of addictions that people typically say, like internet gaming, that they have to do it. Internet porn, you have to look at it or I'm not going to feel good. Eating addictions, I have to do that in order to feel good. If I don't, I feel a bad, oh God, get me a Twix, get me a, like something like that, and I have to do that. And it's not like, oh, you can't regulate it by yourself. And I think we see even more outside of just the substances, but the reason why these aren't really deemed as bad because these are more behaviorally and socially accepted. Mm-hmm. But they have the same kind of compulsory kind of, I can't control myself, I lose myself in it quality, mm-hmm. which I think is just as bad.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's my thoughts.
why you look at me like that when I said promiscuity though? Like that. Listen, man. That could be like a real thing. Like I'll say in some of my darkest times, mm-hmm. that was probably when I was like the most active. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just like a physical need to feel good. So I was just like, eh, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like doing stuff that I typically wouldn't. And I was just like,
I think one of the most dangerous things about that is that the more you, for the reason that you said, like you start to realize patterns of risky behaviors with you.
Yeah.
And I was just like, and that's right. Anything like, okay, this is getting like increasingly daring. Right. So I got to be really careful. But in that moment, you're like, I don't know, because it's soothing something else.
Right.
Not just, you know, a physical kind of.
Yeah, it was.
Like, it's like. Shut
up. I'm sorry.
It could be risky.
Yeah, it was very risky. Very risky. Happy to be here. I'm very happy to be here.
Happy to be here. Okay. She said it happened to be here.
Like, no, whoa. No, ain't nothing happened here, player. Yeah, everything good. Everything chilling over here now. You know, I'm out of that dark space, working to stay out of there. You know what I'm saying? It's been a few years, so.
But I will say this, like as I kind of like wrap up my thoughts a little bit with the okay to not be okay. I was thinking about like, oh, if I go into the podcast having this kind of conversation, you do run a risk of looking vulnerable and then being perceived as weak and this kind of thought gets into your mind. But I think after this, I don't feel like, oh, I'm not weak. It's okay to talk about that. And if even somebody like again, like you was like, well, you're supposed to think that kind of way. No, a lot of us beat ourselves up mm-hmm. who even are in the helping profession. So I do just want to like thank you guys for like just like listening out.
We want to
like,
thank like you that. Too, Tony.
Thanks, Tony. Mm-hmm. I'm still a thug, but thank you.
I know. Gunshots. Come on, gunshots.
Give gunshots. Me gunshots. Shoot them up. Yeah.
Gun tie. Fly tie. Pretty Tony. And don't say my... No, don't do it.
An ass eating Chris.
I don't even want to like close out the episode. I'm about to just turn off everybody's mic. Right, straight hit mute and just like, all right. But no, I feel you. Like I actually look at it the opposite way. I actually have learned from like saying these things on the podcast, and being like vulnerable and that kind of stuff. I actually felt stronger afterwards. Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
Like empowered.
Yeah, because fam, I done said some wild stuff. Like last season, I told all my business.
Oh,
like,
really?
Yeah, man. Like stuff that I would do this way. My family found out about most of the stuff that I went through the podcast. Like none of them knew about like the whole like suicidal thing that I was mm-hmm. going through. They had no idea. So their first time even getting like a hint of that being an issue was from listening to the show. Mm. So, and it was weird because like I was out of that space by then. So for them to like come up to me after, like, yo, man, you all right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you ever need to talk, and it's like, nigga, I'm fine now. Like, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? Like, I appreciate it, but I'm good. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, y'all ain't got to worry about me in that same way. But like I appreciated it, but also I felt good because like I did have that empowering moment where it was like, I'm able to vocalize it because I don't think I could have sat them down and been like, yo, this is what I've been going through. And, you know, if y'all could check on me every now and then, that'd be helpful. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just not... That's a super uncomfortable conversation to have, mm-hmm. but being able to sit behind a microphone and, you know, talk to my co-host and just, you know, say whatever and then just put it out in the world for whoever needs to hear it.
That made it that was a vehicle you needed in order to make that kind of change. And I think
that's how I feel too. This is probably the most vulnerable I've ever been in my entire life with anybody.
Holy shit. So,
yes.
This is random. So. Oh, Spanish words. None of those make sense.
Come on, floor.
No, I was just saying, like, go.
Yeah, remember that Selena concert we went to?
That was so lit.
Yo, it was. Yo, Tony faced down there. It wasn't actually Selena, of course.
Selena y los Dinos. I'm not sure I'm out here lying. I'm like,
no, it was like a impersonator.
Oh, okay.
But it was at like the TLA. Like she was like really good.
She was good.
She was like really, really good. Mm-hmm. Like she looked like Selena. She sounded like her.
Wow,
it was dope.
Shout out to Selena.
Selena's with an S.
Anything for Selena's. I can never get past the part where like she about to drop the rose. I always have.
That's the end of the movie.
No, it's not. I mean, it's a little bit, but I'm gonna cry when I get home.
That's what you've been doing anyway.
Right. And we are done. Goodbye, world.